Welcome back to Sell Better, Sell More. In this module, we're going to discuss negotiation, and in particular, we're going to focus on negotiating mutual interest. My name is Tony Morris, and I'm absolutely delighted to welcome back Yvonne. Would you please reintroduce yourself?
Thank you, Tony. I'm Yvonne Betkober. I've been working for Microsoft for the last 8 years in sales and partner management role. I'm currently running a sales organization across Africa and the Indian Ocean Island, where I'm covering the distribution channel, the partner organization, and the corporate account. I've been in sales and partner sales role in approximately 20 countries across Europe, Middle East, and Africa in the last 8 years. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us, Yvonne, and I'm particularly fascinated to hear so many countries that Yvonne has gained her experience from. Now, here's something interesting we're going to try. Yvonne, I'd like you to imagine that you are the customer. Mm-hmm. I shall play the role of salesman, and let's see how this goes, and ultimately, let's see if I would win a contract from Yvonne. So, I walk into Yvonne's office. Good afternoon, Yvonne. Thank you for taking the time to meet with me to discuss the price for the proposal that we have submitted to you.
Welcome, Tony. It's a very important meeting for us because we need to have a conversation. We sat with the leadership team yesterday and basically we cannot afford the price that you're asking for the solution. We need to have a conversation about getting that price down to a minimum of 30%.
Good heavens. Down to 30%?
Down to 30%.
You can't be serious. Yvonne, listen, we're in business to make a profit, you know? We've spent a lot of time with your people. Your people have agreed that we have the right solution for the requirements, and now you're asking for 30% discount?
Yes, 30%, Tony, and we're serious about that because, yes, your competition also has the right solution for us, and they're offering the right price. Well, so we need to have an understanding how you can come down.
No. I'm sorry. I honestly don't care what competition offers, you know. They're almost certainly, you know, offering a low price, and when it actually gets the contract, they'll push the price up. No, this is totally unacceptable. I'm sorry.
But that's not what is being discussed here, Tony.
Okay.
What is being discussed here is what we can afford, and what we can afford is 30% below what you're asking for. This is where we are.
Tell me something. Do you think I won that contract? Did I get that deal, Yvonne?
Certainly not, Tony.
Did I make some mistakes?
Yes.
Or did I make some major mistakes?
Major mistakes, actually. But I'm curious how you look at your own performance before I kind of give you my feedback.
Well, I don't know. I think my performance was fantastic. You know, she just doesn't want to pay the full price. Mm. No, realistically. Well, let me turn that back to you, Yvonne. Mm-hmm. You know, in real life, if I had behaved like that, look, it's pretty obvious. I behave like an idiot, obviously. You know, what are some of the key mistakes from your perception that if I had done that, what did I do wrong? And then I'll criticize myself a bit further.
There's many things. I think you almost killed the relationship.
Okay.
One, by becoming very aggressive in
right.
the conversation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I felt really kind of almost attacked by
yes.
your reaction from
yes.
a body language
okay.
perspective. Then we brought too much emotion into the conversation because
mm.
discussing price is a rational thing, right? And bringing the emotion make me become emotional on my side as well and basically close down on you. Okay?
Absolutely.
So that's what I've observed.
Okay, well, I mean, that's interesting. I would actually add a few thoughts to Yvonne's, and that is, if we think about negotiation, it's really all about negotiating mutual interest, where Yvonne has to be satisfied, ultimately so do I. And the reality is, negotiation is not a competition. It is not an ego game. It's not about me being better than you, you know, I beat you. Mm. And I like Yvonne's comment very much about no emotion. Emotion has no role in any form of negotiation. Really, if we think about negotiation, and I'd really like to hear your thoughts about this, Yvonne, mm. it's rather than, you know, this competitive, you know, you fight, I fight, etc. It really is more, in my mind, a collaborative approach. It's viewing the customer as a partner. And so let us, as a partnership, mm. let us negotiate an agreement that both parties are willing to fulfill. And if I may just give you a small example, think about the number of times you've won the contract. Your colleagues come to deliver the solution. They actually begin to deploy it. And as you're deploying the solution, you get a few niggles, a few hiccups. Something should have been in place for you to do it. Something wasn't in place. Is that something you've ever come across?
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes we believe that when we close the deal, the relationship is over and we don't need that anymore,
right?
Basically. And I think we overlook the fact that we need to sit at the same side of the table and work with the customer to close the deal and to deliver the solution.
Interesting, because you see, sometimes when you get these little niggly hurdles, obstacles, it's perhaps because someone somewhere did not have his or her interest taken into account when the whole deal was negotiated and contracted. And really, what I'm encouraging people to do is to forget about the traditional approach to negotiation where we talk about win-win. My view is, don't think win-win.
What do you mean by not thinking win-win? That's what we learn, right? That's what we're trying to achieve in a negotiation.
Well, I understand that, Yvonne. You know, win-win really implies I want you to win, I want myself to win. In other words, for both parties to be happy. This is the meaning, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. The reality, however, is somewhat different. You know, Yvonne, I'd like you to win, but I'd actually like to win a little bit more.
It's actually true. We're salespeople. We want to win and we want to compete. And sometimes we compete against the customer.
That's very true. And you know, if you think about it, the word win implies that someone loses.
Absolutely.
You know, you play a game of tennis, there's only one winner, the other person is a loser.
That's correct. Yes.
You know, fine, if you want win-win and you're playing tennis, then make sure you have a draw.
That's probably the best outcome.
Then you're absolutely equal. You know, when we think about negotiation, what would your guidance be for any sales organization in terms of when do we actually start to negotiate? Is that something that happens at the end?
Oh, no, it should not, actually. I think we should always be negotiating. We should start negotiating right from the beginning. What I found is that when we go into the conscious negotiation phase, we're under time pressure.
Right.
And then a lot of the mistakes that we role played at the beginning happen. You get nervous, you become assertive, you know. So it's very important to see negotiation as an end-to-end process that starts with the first engagement and that ends with a solution that makes both sides happy.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And you know, really from the outset, we should be asking ourselves not only what we want, but if we truly want to be collaborative in terms of ultimately aiming for mutual interest, then we should also be asking ourselves, what do we think that the customer wants out of it?
Absolutely. Putting ourselves in the customer's shoes is essential. Being able to understand from where he's coming from, when he's articulating his needs to us, and when he's taking certain standpoints and positions is essential.
Very good. You know, we need to think about what do we want, what does the customer want. Mm-hmm. But you know, the reality is we don't always get what we want.
That's true.
What was that Rolling Stones song? You can't always get what you want or something?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reality is that happens. And therefore, really, we need to be thinking apart from what is it that I want, what would be next best? In other words, what would be my fallback position? And I think you'd probably say the same thing in terms of the customer, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, and it's important to understand, let me call it in simple terms, the plan B for the customer
right.
as well, because that's maybe something we can work with to be able to still come to a solution.
I would even take it one stage further and add to Yvonne's plan B, I would add a plan C. Mm. And there's an expression that you may have heard of, it's called BATNA, which simply stands for Best Alternative to No Agreement. Because the reality is, we're not going to win every deal. We've already discussed that in previous modules. And so if we're not going to win the contract, then is there anything, I mean, do we simply walk away, forget about it? Or should we be planning from the outset, what happens if we don't win the deal? Is there an alternative to no contract? Or is it just mean it's the end of life? Okay. One of the things that I would really encourage salespeople to use, Yvonne, is a value chart.
Value chart? What is it?
Well, it's a very simple, straightforward, but extremely powerful tool for selling. Let's face it, the traditional approach to selling has always been features, functions, oh yes, and benefits.
Yeah.
Agreed?
That's right.
So, you know, think about it. It's the old, let's sell a pen.
Okay.
You'll notice here, Yvonne, that it's a white pen and it has a blue top. If you remove the top, you've got a nice felt nib there, and you'll notice the color is blue.
I see where you're going, Tony.
That sounds like a typical features type of sell. Now, I'm not suggesting that you throw that away totally. If we use a value chart, I would encourage you to list, if it is this pen you're going to sell, then think about three columns. The first column is, what do you believe is valuable to the customer about the fact that this is white and with a blue cap and so on? And simply list all of the features, functions, if you like, of what you're selling.
Okay, I get
that. Now, the interesting thing is, if I were to say to you something very simple, Yvonne, like, it's a white pen, what would your reaction be instinctively?
Yeah, so what? What does that mean for me?
Ah, that's the key point. I may think it's valuable for Yvonne, but am I encouraging her to challenge my value judgment with the so what question or who cares? So what I would simply do with a value chart is list everything that you believe is potentially valuable for the customer. Imagine that you are the customer and that value statement has been put to you. Can you challenge it with so what? Okay? You know, the classic example, boy, I really love this one. Yvonne, we're the industry leader.
Oh, great. So what?
So what? Well, you know what? We all say it, don't we? We're the industry leader. The industry leader has no meaning whatsoever to the customer. If
That's
you
cool.
were to add a few words and say, we're the industry leader, which means your investment risk is minimized because we've been there, we've done that 1,000 times. Ah, that starts to have meaning.
It becomes relevant to me as a customer.
That's exactly my point. So the second column of the value chart is, what would your answer be to your value statement if the customer challenged you? And then there's one final column, Yvonne, and that is, for whom is this valuable? Because let's face it, within every organization, people have different value judgments, different value opinions. Agreed?
Correct. Yeah.
So if I simply go to everyone with this so what answers, people are going to say,
so what is meaningful to me may not be meaningful to somebody else in
Absolutely.
The organization. I get that.
So if we decide this particular value, for whom is that relevant? We're actually building a roadmap of what to talk about from a customer value perception perspective with whom. Again, save time. Talk to the right people about their interest, about the right subject.
I like it, Tony, because it makes you become intentional in having the right conversation with the right people within an organization. And we know that we talk to an average of 6 to 10 different decision makers to be able to close a deal. That's a powerful tool.
Very good. Excellent. And you know what? It's very simple, isn't it? Now, there's an additional thing that I would encourage people to think about when we get into negotiation. You can actually use this a lot earlier, but as we're talking about negotiation, that is, determine within the customer organization, determine the difference between someone's interest and their position.
That's interesting. Can you help me understand the difference?
Yeah. Really, if you think about it, what someone wants is their position. Let's take a simple example. You know, in the sale that I completely screwed up
yes.
a short while ago. All right. Your position was, you wanted a 30% discount.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
That's your position, and that was your negotiating position. You know, you even sort of brought in the fact that competition was offering it. So that was a clear example of what you wanted. Now, the big question is, what really is the interest that lies behind your position of a 30% discount?
I get that. The why I actually want the 30% discount.
Absolutely. Now, there's an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Yvonne actually told us what her interest was. Her position was I want 30% discount because we don't have any budget or something to that effect. Am I right?
Correct.
By the way, did you know what Yvonne did with her body language when she said, we haven't got budget? She closed her palms. Oh. And if you go back to the module about how do I know, how do I tell if someone's lying, closed palms is one of the signs of untruth. There's another way of looking at it. Simple example. Imagine that there's an orange on the table. Mm-hmm. Two sisters approach the orange. They both say, I want that orange.
That's their position?
That's their position. And in that example, they both have the same position, don't they?
They do.
The question now is, why do they want the orange? Sister A says, I want the orange so that I can squeeze it and have fresh orange juice for my breakfast. Sister B comes along and says, but I want the orange because I like peeling oranges, and then I've got those, you know, all the segments so that I can eat them. In this case, same position, different interests. Does this make some kind of sense?
I like it. And listen, if I connect that with something we said earlier, understanding the interest of Sister A, who wants the juice, actually give me an alternative to offer to her, which could be the juice versus selling the orange. While the orange could be misleading me into focusing on just the one thing that she wants, but maybe the why she wants it.
Very good point. Excellent. I like that one very much. Now, there's one additional thing I would encourage people to use, and please bear with me here just for a minute, and that is a mutual interest chart.
Okay.
If you think about any organization, there will be different stakeholders who may be involved in the ultimate decision. I mean, this is something I think you referred to a bit earlier on, Yvonne.
Yes.
Okay? Now, what normally happens, especially in large customer organizations, is we talk to many different people, and ultimately, when it's time to negotiate, we're sent off to the procurement officer. Are procurement people real decision makers in your experience? Are they the real decision makers, Yvonne?
Usually not.
No. If you think about it, procurement people, they are measured and managed by how much blood they can squeeze out of you. That's what they're focused on, am I right?
This is correct.
You know,
yes.
It's like, how much can we squeeze and squeeze and squeeze? Mm. Now, the reason I'm suggesting a mutual interest chart, which is actually fairly simple and straightforward, is we start out by listing across the top all of the identified stakeholders. Simply put their names.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
If you think about it logically, each of those stakeholders will have a different interest. Sometimes they'll be the same, but potentially have different interests in terms of the solution that is being considered, that's being evaluated.
Like the sisters before.
Like
the
sisters. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So if you think about it, IT people, for instance. Someone in the IT department is really focused on current technology. They want state-of-the-art technology.
Mm.
But a colleague who's also in IT might say, well, my interest, my priority, is actually IT productivity.
Mm.
If we spend the time that we should with all of the potential stakeholders, we can actually develop a list, if you like, by stakeholder of what their real interest is in order of priority. If we do that, when it comes to the actual negotiation, and we now sit down with the procurement person who's trying to wring our neck and squeeze every drop of blood out, that person is probably focused on the price and some of the terms and conditions. And that might become challenging for you in normal situation. So my encouragement is, if you have a mutual interest chart, which you can actually put on the table in front of you, or put it on a whiteboard, or turn your laptop around, You can say, well, actually, when I spoke with Mary, her priority is this. When I spoke with John, his priority was that.
That's great.
That actually gives you an extremely powerful tool to support your negotiation. Does
Absolutely.
That make sense?
It does, actually, because it goes beyond talking to one person. You kind of bring your own advocate in a final negotiation by stating what they're interested in,
yes.
broadening the picture.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. And the thing is, we're talking now about mutual interest, okay? This clarifies for us what the customer really is looking for, not just high level, one person, but we have a whole consolidated amount of information from all of them, okay? So again, a very powerful tool for your usage. Throughout negotiation, there are all kinds of questions we can ask, aren't there?
Definitely.
Why? Why not?
Yeah.
There's actually a very, very important question you can ask, which is pure human psychology. Do you think that's reasonable? Yeah? Let's go back to our little role play. If I had done my job better, I would have sold more. Instead of becoming very aggressive, combative, about 30%, how about, Yvonne, how would you have felt if I said, Yvonne, 30%, do you feel that that's reasonable?
I think it would have challenged me to be fairer in how I approached the conversation and kind of brought me closer to where you were.
Well, actually, I like the word fair because you can try this. This is one of those things you can try it at home, okay? Yvonne, do you really think that's fair?
Yeah.
Do
you
know,
put myself in the previous conversation, that would have been a good one to use.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you know why? Because Yvonne knows that she was being unfair by asking for 30%. She was just being, you know, let's call it greedy, if you like. She knew she wasn't being fair.
Yes.
And if human being to human being, if I were to ask, you know, is that really fair? It would have worried her. Psychologically, that would have had a major impact. So please think about some of these questions. Why? Why do you want that? Why don't you want that? Is that reasonable? Is that fair? It's all about moving away from your position to your interest. It's also all about getting the customer who is party to that negotiation to move away from their position to their interest. You see, if I had managed that better, Yvonne's position was she wanted 30%. That was her position. Now, it so happens in that example, she was being untruthful about budget. If she had opened her palms and said, Tony, you know, we really can't manage 30%. You know, our budgets have been cut. Fine, I wouldn't have liked the answer, but at least I knew she was being open, honest, and truthful, and I might have been able to get Yvonne to focus on her real interest and find a way of helping her, maybe by keeping the same price, but some kind of spread payment.
There you go.
Kind of an approach,
yes.
Right? I blew it. I lost that opportunity. So do try and get the customer to focus on interest rather than on their position, okay? There's one additional thing that I would suggest for you in negotiation. We talked a lot about active listening earlier on. In other words, make sure you don't just hear, but you understand. And if we want to really negotiate mutual interest, it is critically important for us to understand what is really going on there. And silence is an extremely powerful tool when you are put under pressure. If, back to the role play, let's try this again. So Yvonne, let's go back to the your position was?
So Tony, we need 30% discount. You know, we don't have budget.
Thanks, Yvonne. You see what happened there? Very interesting. That silence did not signify, no, I'm not going to give you 30%. It created psychological pressure on Yvonne. It gave me time to think. And look what happened. And I know it's a role play, but in real life, that's exactly what happens. By keeping silent, she could not stand the pressure of that silence, and she gratuitously started talking about some other aspects.
It's a very powerful tool. I think many people don't feel comfortable with silence, and if we master this tool, it gives us a very good position to actually drive active negotiation conversation.
You know, I even go so far as to say one of the golden rules in selling is when you get to the end of the sales cycle, when you actually ask for the contract, you ask for approval, you ask permission, whatever it may be. Now, the customer is under huge psychological pressure. Mm-hmm. They've agreed with everything so far, but now it's decision time. Should I or shouldn't I sign? And we as salespeople, we can't stand the silence. Yeah. We're anxious to win that deal. So what do? You know what, Yvonne? I mean, that really is a superb...
It's a great solution. It's a unique opportunity for you. You really need to buy into that. And we talk over the customer.
And you know what happens? You let the customer off the hook, so to speak. I know it sounds a little bit like a trick and a technique. No. Silence can be a very powerful tool. Really, to wrap this up, please remember, although we are almost pre-programmed as salespeople to win, we always want to win. We want to win the deal. And yes, let's be honest, we want the customer to win, but we want a bit more. If we adopt a different approach, if we change our whole attitude, our behavior, and start thinking about creating mutual interest, the reality is you'll win more. And that's what it's all about. Yvonne, thank you very much for taking the time to join me. Thanks for paying attention.
Thank you, Tony.